welcome, welcome to Ray and Tay today. I'm the first half of that. I'm Ray. That's Tall Rayside.
And I guess I'm the second half. That's Tay, Eric Taylor, and just welcome. Thank you for joining us on the ride. You want to give us a call, it is 718-664-9098. And you can hit us up on the Gmail at Ray and Tay Today. That's RAEANDTAY today at gmail.com. And it's the same for Twitter and Facebook. And, you know, get at us on the social media. You could also check out our podcast, the back ones on iTunes. And you can check us out at RayandTayToday.com. We're everywhere. That's what we're trying to do, man. We're here for you. So, Ray, why don't you let them know how we're going to attack a great Friday show with a special guest, man.
Yeah, so we got a big-time show for you on this Friday, cold Friday here on the East Coast and the Midwest. It's freezing. It's in the 20s. wrap up. Put your hat on, your scarf on, and turn your internet on. So, glad you could be with us. We've got breaking news, as we always do. We'll take you around the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, a little bit of tennis going on, Australian Open. Then we'll touch on some college basketball. There were some good games yesterday. There's a only one top 25 matchup this weekend, but it's a good one. And we'll go through the NBA All-Stars. So the reserves were selected. We got a little debate for you on who's an All-Star snub, who should have been in the game, who should not have been in the game or been selected to the game. And
our
then
top five.
We'll go with our top five segment, top five All-Star snubs. It'll be more of an interactive back and forth. And then we have a special guest, George Reister. He's an ex-NFL tight end. I don't know if you had him on your fantasy team a few years ago. He played for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
I know. They picked
Oregon
him up one
Duck. Yeah, he's an Oregon Duck, so he's got a lot invested in the whole what's going on up there in Eugene and the really the resurrection of that program and the fact that they're up at elite status. And he'll talk to us a little bit about college and a little bit about the NFL. Great to hear his opinions on what's going on with this preparation for the Super Bowl and the playoffs. And so, yeah, we got an action-packed show for you, so let's get into some breaking news.
Well, I'll take it to the NFL. We have to tip our hat. Everyone knows about Ray Lewis retiring. The center, six-time Pro Bowler, Peyton Manning's main man, who was a Pro Bowler this year for the Packers and Aaron Rodgers, Jeff Saturday, has announced his retirement. So kudos to him. He was a great center. You know, this year wound up getting benched, said he just couldn't really do it anymore. And I guess that was kind of honest. Talked to McCarthy and said, listen, I'm breaking down. But he's calling it quits, man. And it's good to hear that Ed Reed said he's coming back, so kill the controversy there in Baltimore. And you know what? It hasn't been 5 minutes yet, Ray, but the former defensive coordinator of the Dallas Cowboys, maybe 300 and some odd, you know, whatever day, you know, minutes later, whatever, you could figure it out. Rob Ryan, defensive coordinator for the St. Louis Rams with Jeff Fisher, you know, and Jeff Fisher used to work with his dad, you know. So I think it's nice, and I think that Rob Ryan will do well in St. Louis. So that should be interesting.
Yeah,
and,
your boy's back. We got a Pro Bowl coming up on Sunday where Roger Goodell
has to be
like...
your boy's back. Nola was fired first. I got to tell you that one. Saints, you know, your boy comes back, Sean Payton, and the next day he fires his defensive coordinator. It was, you know, he's like, hey, my defense is giving up 400 yards a game, so Spagnuolo's got to go. So Steve is gone.
Yeah, that
go ahead, tell us about
move.
This Pro Bowl, man. Are we going to watch it this year or what?
Well, here's the thing. Roger Goodell had to basically be like the principal and say to his students, look, you got to play hard, because what was on display last year was just a travesty. It was really disgusting. The guys didn't play. They didn't really want to be there. They were joking around. And the thing is, people are so hungry for football, they'll watch it anyway. It's
the ratings were still great, right? That's the comedy.
That they had a good point. They said that they watch the NFL draft gets higher ratings than NBA basketball in the playoffs. So that just tells you how much of a stranglehold football has on
it's numero uno in America.
It really is. So I hope. So I'm conflicted, right? I want a great game, but I understand it's a dangerous sport. I'd hate to see somebody get a concussion or somebody separate a shoulder or somebody tear an ACL in a game that doesn't matter. And in other sports, you don't have the risk of bodily injury. So in baseball, in basketball, even in hockey, which has got some physical contact in it, it's not dangerous to play in an all-star game. But in football, it's dangerous. So I don't know.
Right.
Maybe the long run. In the long run, this game just goes away. They figure out something else. Maybe they make it a skills competition. Maybe they do something else for an all-star weekend. But this game.
GMs and owners, they have too much on the table. I can't have my $16 million quarterback getting hurt, or my $13 million running back, or my number one receiver. It is a risk. So, well, let's wish them well for health. And, you know, you saw some of the veterans, Eli and Peyton and some other guys, talking about the effort. And, you know, Russell Wilson and Andrew Luck are there. You know, they've been added on, different guys. So everybody seems to be saying the right thing. And I think it'll be, if nothing else, entertaining. And we have the Senior Bowl coming up tomorrow.
Yeah.
See how these college players are looking. And the big buzz out of the Senior Bowl, the practice and everything in terms of quarterback, Arkansas's finest, who had a great junior year, Tyler Wilson, is looking good. You know, and like we've seen some you know, I've seen some of the practices. Landry Jones has been playing well. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. So real quick, we got Australian Open. We've got the finals in the men. So it's Andy Murray and Novak Djokovic, a rematch of Wimbledon. And so we'll see what happens out over there. We've got Azarenka against Li Na on the women's side of the bracket. So good tennis this weekend if you want to stay
Sloan
up.
Yeah, Sloan lost in the
tonight.
Semis.
Yeah.
American loss in the semis. That's
so
all right. And, you know, I kind of want Murray to win again. I got to be honest. I want Murray to get, you know, I want him to get it.
Yeah, he's played second fiddle. He's been number four for so long. Behind,
it's hard
you know,
to crack
Nadal,
that.
Yeah, Nadal, Djokovic, and obviously Roger Federer. So,
yeah,
it's nice to see him have some success because he's always been that guy that loses in the semis or loses in the finals.
Definitely. So, well, listen, let's keep it moving. And when we look around and before we get to the NBA, talk about some college hoops. Last night, I have to laugh. I love Bill Walton, legendary player. You know, the Suns are, you know, played ball. Used to be NBC color commentator. I think sometimes he exaggerates a little bit. UCLA went in and they put the smack down pretty quickly on Arizona, who's number six in the country. And on the road in the Pac-12 to go and win, you know, pretty handily over Arizona at their house, that was great. But he said it was the greatest UCLA road victory ever. Come on, Bill. But Shabazz played good. And we have to see what's up with Travis Ware. He got hurt from the Ware brothers. But kudos to UCLA. And like we said off air, you know, I could see UCLA moving. We're going to see a lot of movement from different teams. You know, Michigan, they held on and got their win, so they'll probably move up to number one. But UCLA will probably, you know, crack the top 25. And, you know, so good for them. And listen,
yeah, and they're
6-1
in the
Pac-12. Game.
They're 6-1 in the Pac-12. So they definitely are looking like they're hitting their stride. And they're a good-looking team. Problem is, you're right, if Ware goes down, they had Josh Smith transfer, so if Ware goes down, then they really only have the other Ware and Kyle Anderson really on the board. So they're a little bit suspect up front.
A little thin.
Yeah.
And
this
weekend.
So
now what's the big game? You said there's a big game Saturday. I mean, even though we have some Big East matchups, right? Syracuse at Villanova, you know,
Maryland
other good ones.
On Saturday.
Ah, my Terps, that's right. We play Duke.
Yes, go Duke. No, I'm just kidding.
Yo, Terps.
Got to get you riled up. So you got some in-conference games. You got Syracuse, Villanova, Oklahoma, Kansas, Louisville, Georgetown. But no two top 25 teams playing each other, right? Except when we get to Sunday, where we've got Michigan State going to Bloomington to play number seven Indiana. So that's 13 Michigan State at number seven Indiana. So that's a nice little matchup on
a great
cold
matchup.
Sunday in Indiana.
Woo! With
so
no NFL this weekend? Listen, with no NFL this weekend, you got to check, you know, and obviously NBA on ABC starting up with some good games. But then you also got to check out some nice college hoops.
Yeah,
I'll be watching.
Michigan-Illinois could be a good game, too. Illinois is not in the top 25, but if they play a good game or if they even beat them, obviously they'll break into the top 25. So
a little bit
of college basketball just to whet your appetite a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, let's get into it, man. I mean, before we get to the reserves, we got to give Knicks props. They haven't – well, it's been 13 games since they – one up in Boston.
Up in Boston, yeah. That's a tough
place
to play.
Yeah, that was a big win. And I think that obviously Melo struggled early, you know, and you saw Shumpert and Chandler and Amari hold it down and look good. I mean, Amari had some oomph in him. You know, nice dunk in the fourth quarter, good rebound when he came in. I still think they're trying to figure out spacing, right, with him, Chandler, and Melo. But I got to say, JR shot horrible early on, but then he hit the big shot at the end. And, you know, that's what the Knicks are about. I think that this season, whether it's Priglione or Kidd, and, you know, granted, listen, Felton might come back against Philly Saturday or Atlanta Sunday, and he's missed about, you know, I think he's missed 12 games now. They miss him. And, people sometimes forget. Yeah, he's the straw that makes, you know, stirs the drink, and you need Raymond Felton because guess what? He can take it to the hole and penetrate and dish, and he'll get Amari the ball and pick and roll. He'll get Melo in the sweet spot. Not to knock Jason Kidd, but he's not that quick anymore and not that type of point guard anymore. He can't break somebody down off the dribble and penetrate.
Well, I think what you said was 100% right is that the issue is spacing, and the issue is offensive continuity, and the issue is how do you get the people, the ball in their favorite positions, and more specifically, how do you get Amari and Carmelo on the court at the same time and keep them both happy? And I think Raymond Felton's the only guy that can do that. Ultimately, like we said on the last show, I think you need your best three front court players on the court during the fourth quarter. I mean, through most of the game and during the fourth quarter. So this notion that Amari's going to come off the bench and Amari's going to be your sixth man, I don't buy it. You got to figure out a way to have Amari and Carmelo play together with Tyson Chandler in the front court. You can go small, you can go big at points in the game, but ultimately those three have to be on the court together for 25 minutes out of the game, I think.
Well, the question is the backcourt. Let me ask you this. When the game's on the line, and maybe it depends on matchups, but with now you having, let's say, when a healthy Shumpert, healthy Felton, Kidd, and JR, so you have the three in the front court. Out of those four, who are the two in the back court? Who are you playing? Because you could do any combination of those four.
It's a nice dilemma to have. I mean, you love Kidd with his savvy and his veteran and the fact that he can hit those threes. But ultimately, you like Raymond Felton probably to get you an easy basket, maybe. Penetrate, set up the big man.
Draw fouls.
Iman Shumpert's your best on-ball defender. But J.R. Smith gives you
another score, defense, and
another score. So, you know, that might have to be who's playing well and matchups, and maybe they go offense, defense. But it's a nice problem to have.
No. Listen, Woodson, you know, Woodson's got some amazing dilemmas. And as a coach, you know, he, to me, could be, you know, throw his hat in the ring with Del Negro and some other guys, Thibodeau and Frank Vogel for Coach of the Year. But speaking of coaches, how about in the desert with a big upset, playing back-to-back, winning at Sacramento, and then, even though it's without CP3, the Phoenix Suns beat the Clippers last night. Lindsey Hunter, ladies and gentlemen, is 2-0. As a head coach,
take out
the interim tag off my man, yo. Let Lindsey get a contract, okay?
Well, let's not get caught up in a moment, but he is batting 1,000, so let's have him retire now, and he'll be the all-time winningest coach.
No. Listen, you can't say that caught up in a moment. That's not fair, Lindsey. Listen, when you have an interim coach like that, and you're trying to get something going and spark a team who's, you know, tied for the worst record in the West, and you're trying to do something, it's hard for a coach to come in there and people and young players, to, you know, whether you're going to start to play P.J. Tucker and Kendall Marshall and some of the other, and, you know, Beasley, who's not that young, but he's 24, you know, you've got to say, okay, this coach is here for a minute. I mean, if you're going to go with him and you took him over Marley and some other cats who were very upset and could have easily gotten a job, and, you know, and I just
– Look, I'm
I feel
not
like
saying –
you've got to give him a year.
Okay. I mean, he's going to have till the end of the year. And then in the off season, you evaluate whether Lindsey Hunter is the best coach. And look, I remember Lindsey Hunter as a player, and guards tend to be better coaches than forwards for some reason. They just
definitely
kind of have that notion of,
and they're playing for him
together and leading
give,
the team.
Give him that credit.
Look,
yeah.
I'm not saying he's not a candidate, but I'm saying I'm okay with him being the interim coach for now. Let him earn it, and then in the off season, take a step back, take a deep breath, and then see if you're the if you're the Phoenix Suns management, if this is the right guy for your team. Oh, that's all I'm saying. It's only been two games.
Breathe easy.
I wish him all the best. So speaking of coaches,
yes,
let's talk about who the coaches put on this NBA All-Star team on the reserves for the East and the West.
All right.
So obviously the fans vote in the starters and the coaches put in the reserves. So in the reserves you have five first-timers in the East. So you got Kyrie Irving, Drew Holiday, Tyson Chandler, Joakim Noah, and Paul George. My guy, you're not ready for Paul George to be
Paul
an All-Star
George
and most improved player. So those five guys are first-timers, and then you have Luol Deng and Chris Bosh. So those are our Eastern Conference All-Stars. And then in the West, we've got the complete opposite end of the spectrum. Timmy Duncan in his 14th year.
15th.
I think it was 15th. 14th All-Star appearance. 15th, I think, is Garnett and Kobe. So they have 15, and they're only behind Kareem, who had 19. But, yeah, Timmy is in his 14th. And then rounded out with up front, he's got LaMarcus Aldridge, David Lee, Z-Bo, and then – that's Zach Randolph.
Wait, give him some love, man. Zach Randolph. Say the brother's name.
Z-Bo. Zach Randolph. And then Russell Westbrook, James Harden, and Tony Parker in the backcourt.
And that's James' first one.
And that's James' first one, right. So six first-time All-Stars.
That's good. Could have been more. So listen, let's talk about who – let's go to the West first, right? Less arguments in the West. I mean, congrats to all of them, and maybe you say, you know, listen, Golden State is the fifth best record in the West. They easily could have had two guys, because to me, Portland is eighth or ninth in the West, and I could swap out Stephen Curry, who's got 21 points, 7 assists a game, third in 3-point field goal percentage. To me, Steph Curry could be on this team over LaMarcus. That's just, you know, my one thing.
Yeah,
honestly, Jamal Crawford. I think Jamal Crawford's having a great season.
Okay, but here's the thing. You, every time you say somebody's on the team, you got to take somebody off the team. So Steph Curry is averaging 20.9, so call it 21.6 assists. LaMarcus Aldridge is averaging 20.7 points and 8.8 rebounds. So I can't take LaMarcus Aldridge, and you become materially smaller. So you end up going with four guards, and none of them have much size. James Harden has a little bit of size, so he can play the 2-3. So to me, Steph Curry was just
unlucky. But the East is a smaller team roster anyway. They're pretty small. They're not that big.
Yeah, but I got to go in there with those forwards. And I don't think he deserves it over LaMarcus Aldridge. I mean, if anything, he's equal to LaMarcus Aldridge. And LaMarcus Aldridge,
but you could argue
forward.
Lillard, right? Lillard might be playing better than and be the real glue to the Blazers this year. Lillard's having a great season. My Rookie of the Year pick, by the way. I mean, he's doing big things. Now, Stephen Curry, I mean, man, he's lights out.
I just
Clay
think
Thompson.
Stephen Curry got a raw deal. This is a bad year to be a guard in the Western Conference because he is the sixth most deserving guard, right? The two that are starting, obviously, Paul. Well, now that Paul's missing some games, maybe he'll get in as an injury, you know, substitution. But Paul and Kobe as the starters, and then Harden, Westbrook, and Tony Parker, all five of those guys are just a little bit more deserving than Steph Curry.
Yeah.
So
and Tony Parker's a beast.
Great,
He's shooting 52% as a guard. That's incredible.
You know, on the team with the second best record in basketball. So,
yeah.
So Steph Curry, unfortunately, has the sixth best argument in the Western Conference. That's just how stacked the Western Conference is at guard, because Steph Curry is averaging 21 a game, and he's really carrying that team. Now, his teammate David Lee made the team, so you could argue maybe he makes it over David Lee. But, again, I don't want to swap a forward for a guard. I think you got to look at the guard separately and the forward separately. So I feel for Steph Curry, and he's an all-star in my book. I just don't think he makes this team. I just don't see how.
Yeah, and I got to say, I mean, obviously, you know, Jamal Crawford could probably – he probably will get Sixth Man of the Year. And with CP3 missing a lot of time and no Billups, no Grant Hill, and, you know, a lot of people coming in and out of the lineup, Crawford has, you know, has been the Clippers' leading scorer. You know, him and Blake have been holding it down, and Crawford is having a great season. Missed a big free throw last night against Phoenix, but Crawford's been having a really good season. So shout out to him, a Michigan man, ex-Nick, ex-Bull. He, in my mind, he definitely could have got on that team.
Yeah,
as well.
The other guys that were in consideration, maybe Marc Gasol, Serge Ibaka, you know, probably
yeah.
could have made an argument for them.
You got
to
you
get
could argue
team.
Exactly. Ibaka, listen, Ibaka is up there for most improved as well, right? Him and Paul George. Ibaka's playing great ball and is attacking and scoring offensively, along with the blocks and the rebounds. So let's look at the Eastern Conference.
All
this
right,
one is kind of interesting. I got to say, I'm not hurt by this, but I'm not a Brooklyn Nets fan. But I know for our boy Ricky Rivers and all them Brooklyn Cats, to have the third best record in the East and have no All-Stars, that's got to sting. You know, your boy Brook Lopez, you know, you could argue him. I don't think D will, even though, look, on a bad year for him is still a great year, right? He's 17-8, and that's a bad year for D will, who's starting to play better now that Avery's gone. But maybe the coaches punished the Nets for, you know, getting rid of Avery, one
they
of their
did.
Own.
That's what people are saying, that they
that's
said, look,
the statement
you
that
got,
they made.
You got a coach fired. Us coaches are not going to vote
but
you in and not
are
you
in
you
love with Bosch being on this team? I like to give credit for a good record, which is why you could even argue Gasol and Steph Curry, because, you know, they're 4th and 5th in the West. But then in the East, Miami is number one. The Knicks are number two. The Knicks, to me, very easily could have had a third player. I think J.R. Smith, and granted, no bench guy since Kobe in 98 has made the All-Star team. But to me, you know, Crawford and J.R. Smith, if this was the year that anybody could have made it that was really a sixth man, this could have been that year. And J.R. Smith, he's the second leading scorer on the second team in the East. So to me, they
yeah,
can get three guys.
But he's only averaging 16.5 a game. I don't see how you can put J.R. Smith on his team. J.R.'s my man.
Yeah, but that's, wait, 16.5, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, and he's playing great defense, and he's had 2 big game winners.
Okay, but
he's had Melo in and out of the lineup.
But
wait,
those
wait.
Aren't all-star numbers.
I don't
who
know.
Are you,
I'm liking,
who are you putting
I'm
off, who are you taking off the
oh,
team?
Oh, man, listen, there's a, look, you, look, Philly's not in the playoffs now. Holiday,
yeah,
Holiday,
Drew
Holiday, good, Holiday.
Yeoman's work, though. If it wasn't for Drew Holiday, that team would be the worst team in the league.
I could agree with
huge...
that. I mean, and he it's not that he doesn't deserve it, but how about when you look at the East? Bosch is one that I'm not in love with. I'm not in love with. I definitely like Paul George. Dang, Noah deserves it to me. Noah, you know, Noah's been playing ball. Dang. Okay, I mean, you know, I think the Bulls, look, they're in the same spot as Golden State. They're 5th in the East, and so they get two guys. I'm just saying that to me, sometimes you got to look at a guy who's doing good stats or almost equivalent stats on a team that's doing, you know, that has got a better record. Josh Smith, they're 6th in the East, and he's averaging 17 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists. Josh Smith's getting busy. For a team that everybody thought might have the worst one of the worst records in the East outside of Orlando, Charlotte,
okay,
and Wizards.
I can make an argument for Josh Smith and Brook Lopez and by numbers Paul Pierce, but they're in the eighth spot. I can't make an argument for J.R. Smith right now.
And even Brandon Jennings. They're in the seventh spot. Brandon
yeah.
Jennings has
well, look,
got a right
me,
to be on
Brooke
the team.
Brook Lopez is the hardest one because Brook Lopez is doing great things. He's carrying that team. So even though Deron Williams is probably their best player, Deron Williams has been up and down and didn't play well under Avery and had the bad ankle and everything. Brook Lopez is averaging 18.5 a game, only 7.5 rebounds for a center, but he's up there in block shots, two blocks a game.
But he did miss some time, so maybe maybe that's another reason.
The problem for him, he missed those games, he missed 10 games. But the problem for him is also that in that Eastern Conference team, who are you going to replace? Because you can't roll with three centers. I mean, you could, but you'd probably.
Well, you got Noah and Chandler already.
Centers. Exactly. And you got Noah and Chandler already coming off the bench. So are you going to add another guy, like a Brook Lopez?
No,
Kevin
once
Garnett
they decided on Noah, because I knew Chandler was going to make it, but once they decided on Noah, that kind of X'd out Lopez. But it's so funny, right, because the Chicago Bulls are fifth and the Brooklyn Nets are third in the East. So you could say, well, hey, put Lopez over Noah. But Noah's having a great season. I mean,
yeah, it's only a game and a half difference, though, right? It's not like it's a six game difference.
No. I'm just saying in terms of what the seeding is and stuff like that. But yeah, listen. I think the one thing is we all know it's going to be a great NBA All Star weekend, like it always is. It's a shame that LeBron. This is what pisses me off, Ray. He lied to us. He was on national television on TNT. Was it 4 or 5 years ago? I'm gonna be in a dunk contest next year. Well, what happened? You've never done it. Kobe did it. Jordan did it. Dr. J did it. David Thompson did it. Tracy McGrady did it. Vince Carter did it. Dominique. All the great players. Larry Nance.
To his defense, here's a couple things. To his defense, okay. Most players do it in their first 5 or 6 years, right? He's doing it in his ninth year? Eighth or ninth year?
No, this is his ninth or tenth, yeah.
So I get it. The problem is the lure and the attractiveness of that game has really gone away, right? If you think about it, the only stars to have participated in that All-Star weekend dunk contest
Howard's the last one. Yeah.
Exactly. Dwight Howard and Blake Griffin.
Yeah.
So the NBA had a sliver, a window, if they could have convinced LeBron to make that game to kind of recapture the old, juice that it had.
Woo!
But they didn't.
Messed it up.
And so I think that game, another thing, that All-Star, weekend dunk contest, I think that one's going away too. Because nobody's going to be interested. You need star power.
Well, they
power,
messed it up, though, when they changed the rules. Like, you had all these multiple times to dunk it. It used to be eight contestants, and they used to just do rounds, and you had your couple of dunks, and that was it. I think once they started teeter-tottering and messing up the rules of it, that sort of changed everything, and then it wasn't as exciting and it wasn't as fun, I mean, remember Terrence Stansberry? Remember all the different caveats? Oh, my goodness.
Oh, sure. But it started with the fact that you had Dr. J and Larry Nance. You had star power, Dr. J, Larry Nance, and Dominique Wilkins, Michael Jordan. Now, of course, you had the Terrence Stanberrys in there doing their 360 dunks, which were great. But it was the
Remember
combination
Clyde?
Of
Remember
great
Drexler?
Athletes. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Great athletes, but also the great athletes / stars were doing it. Too, with all due respect to Nate Robinson and Gerald Green and all these guys, they're fun to watch, but it's not the same
it's
as
not
watching
the same,
Vince Carter, Kobe Bryant, and hopefully one day LeBron James get in there and show us their dunks.
Yeah, no, it's it is what it is. I think it's still going to be a great All-Star weekend. I hope for the Knicks, our guy Steve Novak, who led the NBA in 3-point field goal percentage last year. I think Novak will probably be in it this year. And, I think it's going to be fun. Oh, and also, that's the thing, too. Novak has kind of been a non-factor lately, and that's because he misses Felton. When Felton comes back with that penetration, he opens up Novak, and Novak will probably get a little bit more minutes because then you could say I could keep him on the court even though he might be more of a liability defensively. But when he's out there with the three and that threat, he really, spreads the court out, and that's where the Felton connection with Novocaine and Gotham Lob City, I like that, with Felton the Chandler boy. I'm telling you, this Nick T, I'm excited. It's going to be on.
Yeah, I can't wait for Felton to come back because he'll come back right around the All-Star break.
And don't let us get Rashid and can be healthy, baby. Oh.
Well, I hope they can be, but I have a feeling, a bad feeling that the injury bugs are going to catch up to both of them.
Well, listen, Rashid, we got to tell our audience, too, on Monday, we will be talking about this great weekend of the Knicks and talking about the Knicks because Ian Begley from ESPN New York will join us. And, you know, Ian's got all the inside, and you always hear him, you know, asking questions to Woodson at the press conferences. So Ian is going to break down the NBA, the reserves, and the Knicks with us. So he'll give us, you know, the real, you know, 411 on what's going on our Monday show. So I look forward to that. So just had to throw that in there for the fans and for the good people, you know. So
yes,
let me ask you this, right?
Monday.
Let me ask you this. Do you think Drew Holiday, do you think someone like him, do you feel like Philadelphia, their season and this great season that he's having, do you think it's all wasted just by the whole trade of bringing in, I guess, damaged goods with Andrew Bynum?
Well, look, they had to do something. And I don't mind them going for it because they were a team that was kind of stuck. So they got rid of Iguodala, and they said, let's bring in Andrew Bynum and shoot for a championship or at least contend for a championship. But it didn't work out. You can never predict injuries, and they tried. They tried. So, look, Drew Holiday's a
young
kid.
And Andre's not doing that much in Denver.
Drew Holiday's
like 12, 13 a game.
He's only 22 years old. So you lock him down, and you're
Evan
good.
Turner's developing.
He's 19-9. I mean, this dude, and 4 rebounds for a skinny 6'4 guy. Drew Holiday's getting it done. So that's a nice little nucleus. If they could have gotten something out of Andrew Bynum, that would have been a real interesting team because you figure Spencer
Thaddeus
Hall
Young's playing ball
Bynum,
too.
Give them, yeah,
Thaddeus
give
them Young,
depth up front. Thaddeus
Spencer
Young.
Hawes. Yeah.
Yeah. They can,
you know,
they can put some talent out there.
Yeah, no. I like that team. But listen, this is the other guy, my man. You know how I feel about him. Top 5 point guard right now, Kyrie Irving. I was glad he made the team. For a second, I didn't think they were going to put him on, so I was really happy that he made it. Kyrie is the man, y'all. He has the perfect penetration. He can, you know, if you foul him, he could, you know, get the N1. He's got the strength. He can boogie. He's got a jumper. He's got the speed. You know, you kind of want to see John Wall get healthy again, right? Because see, like, these young point guards all to go at it like they do in the West. You kind of want the East to have those same matchups. So hopefully Kyrie, Holiday, and Wall, you know, this is the point. This is definitely the era of the point guard.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, look, we're talking about trying to get a guy, Steph Curry, who's averaging 20 and 6.6 assists. We're trying to get him onto the All-Star team. That's how stacked – the West.
Yeah.
And then in the East, you've got guys like Derrick Rose who are going to be back next year. And who knows, Raymond Felton. And, you know, these guys, you know, we can have some depth in the East as well. So you've got 10 or 12 or so really, really good guards or point guards in the NBA these days. So, yeah, NBA point guard position is doing very well. As badly as the center position is, you know, as weak as the center position is, the point guard position is very strong.
No, it definitely is. So listen, as we look forward to George joining us soon, let's talk a little bit about this football and even to me, when I start to hear about the Super Bowl hype coming up, and, you know, obviously Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we're going to dedicate a lot of time to the Super Bowl. But I think what's interesting about it now, I think these teams are settling in. They're, you know, getting their tickets together. I think they're at a place where, you know, cats are like, okay, we're in the Super Bowl. You know, and I think for the Ravens, they know, like, this is the last dance for Ray. Ed Reed announced that he'll be back, but I think that this team, as you know, all the plays that they went on the field and 87, I think they're at a place where they're ready. Like, I'm sensing, you know, in my head I go back and forth, like, oh, who's it going to be, and yada, yada, yada. But I'm sensing that we're going to have a classic on our hands.
So you like a tight game. We'll give our predictions next week, obviously.
Oh, yeah, yeah, but definitely.
You like, in general, what do you like? You like a tight game, low-scoring game?
I like it probably in the 20s. You know, I'm probably like a medium. You know, I'm still thinking. Because, look, both of these secondaries, they could be had. And so I think it's more about the offensive lines, you know, and the protection, really.
Trenches. Who wins in the trenches? Well, both of these teams, when they're at their best, they're running the ball, each totally different way to run the ball, but they run the ball and then they throw off the run. So whether it's just off of play action or just off of a, you know, ball control offense, these guys are all about running the football. So yeah, those offense, it comes back to this offensive line. Who can win at the line of scrimmage?
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking for me, you hear these great stories, and, you know, Frank Gore, I was hearing his story on ESPN, and it's just kind of sad, you know, he lost his mother at a very young age. She was in her 40s, and, you know, these emotional stories start to come up, you know, with the different players, and, you know, they're nice exposés, you know. Oh, and speaking of which, man, we didn't get to really mention it, but it's something close to my heart, because, you know, your boy Tay, I used to, you know, I taught for 9 years in the Bronx, man, at Lavelle School for the Blind with severely disabled children who, you know, had MR, Down syndrome, Tourette's, the whole nine. And Owen Grosser, shout out to the young man who was on ESPN who, you know, hit two shots the other night, and then I think he hit 2 3-pointers, eighth grader who got to play in his game, and then even last night at 5 o'clock had another game, and I think he scored 4 points. And it's just a great story, and I thought it was really cool for ESPN to, you know, put it on the air and just show it. And, oh, man, it just made me emotional, man. It reminded me of one of my favorite kids, Amin Nassar. So I was
no,
really happy for
Owen,
man.
And what was nice is that how much love they gave him on SportsCenter. Well, first it was a Twitter campaign to get him on the, you know, hashtag SportsCenter Top 10, and then for SportsCenter to actually interview the kid and go talk to his dad. Very, very much a heartwarming story. Good for him.
Yeah, no, those are one of those things, you know, and you're like, that's what, you know, Ray and I always say, you know, that's when sports heals, and it's true in that sense, you know. And let me tell you, man, it's great. I tweeted it out to some people, and, you know, our man, the PTP-er, baby, Dickie V hit me back, yo, on Twitter, man. I love it.
Funny.
Dick Vitale, oh, man, and he's got an open invitation to our show anytime, Dickie V. You are always welcome on Ray and Tay Today because Ray and I grew up, you know, imitating you, listening to you, talking, you know, college basketball, ACC. Yeah.
Oh, well, transition to hear it's been 25 years, and I was watching this game live. It was 25 years ago today that Jerome Lane dunked it and broke the backboard with the most famous announcement. You know, announcer,
it was during
player
the week.
Combo.
It was a school night, and we called each other on the phone immediately.
Oh, my God. Bill Raftery says, send it in, Jerome. Oh, what a great call. Mike Gorman, you know, Miller, the coach at Arizona, steals the ball.
Yeah, was a point guard.
Dribbles
the
ball, and he's thinking to himself, oh, God, I got Demetrius Gore, who's a decent finisher, on my left, and I got Jerome Lane on my right. I give it to Jerome Lane, and Jerome Lane just goes out there and brings down the backboard. And then there's a pause, and Gorman and Raftery look at each other, and then he says, Bill says, send it in, Jerome! What a
ball. Great. And you know what's
so
funny? Now, let me ask you, was Bobby Martin on that team too? I think he was still there, right?
No, I think he was gone. I think that was in 88. That was in January of 88. So I think Sean Miller was like a freshman or sophomore. Demetrius Gore was you know, Charles Smith had obviously just left. We got to look that pit team up. But yeah, what a call 25 years ago. You can't think of an announcer and a player that are more linked than Bill Raftery and Jerome Lane.
Send it in, Jerome.
Yeah. Can you imagine? That's 25 years ago.
Sean Miller
is now the coach at Arizona.
Don't get me started with that.
He was the guy.
Now, that's something right there. You want to talk about going back. Like, what? You know, like that. But see, those are the memories, ladies and gentlemen, that we talk about when we talk about the Big East. Like, that's why we can't just say, you know, like
just rivalries in general, right? That the great thing about college sports, and you know, when George calls in, we'll talk to him about this, you know, as an Oregon guy, you know, they had Oregon State. They had their rivals. And now in football, obviously it's USC and Oregon, and it makes for great rivalries. Great rivalries makes for great college athletics. And the fact that this Big East is going away is just, it just kills me. So, hold on, I think we got our caller coming in. Let's patch him in.
All right.
Hey, George, welcome to the show. It's Ray and Tay today.
How you guys doing today?
Good. How are you doing?
Oh, we're great, George. Thanks for joining us, and it's just good to have you on the air. How you doing out there in the Cali weather, man?
Man, it's Cali weather. It's not typical Cali weather right now. It's raining. It's about 50 degrees. I feel like I'm out there in the Northeast.
Well, no complaining.
Totally relate.
Snowing here
totally
in New York.
Yeah. It's in the single digits out there right now, right?
Yeah. And we got some snow actually as I look out the window.
I mean, too bad it's not Christmas. That's the only time it needs to be snowing outside.
So, George, man, let's jump right into it. You know, for our audience that doesn't know, I mean, obviously, you know, you were an Oregon Duck, Jacksonville Jaguar tight end. I wanted to ask you, as we talk about, you know, Saturday announced his retirement, and Ray Lewis, obviously, you know, with the Super Bowl, he's retiring. Tell our audience, for you, what was the transition like, you know, leaving the game and the Jaguars and that stuff and sort of getting into all that you're into now, the blogging, the television, the broadcasting, cupcakes. Like, what's George doing, and how did you transition into that?
Well, honestly, it's a very difficult transition, especially if you, I mean, whether you've been prepared for it, because the majority of people who get out of the NFL, they don't get out like Ray Lewis is out. They get out like I get out, like I ended up out. They ended up out through injury.
Right.
And so you never know when that day is going to happen. So even if you are making plans for it and you are preparing, let's say that you wanted to be an architect, then maybe in the off season, maybe you were taking some classes, maybe you interned somewhere or anything. But at the end of the day, I was 29 when I retired, and you're starting, and essentially you're starting fresh. And when the people that you went to college with, the men and women you went to college with, they have a head start on you in regular life, as it will.
Right.
So you're essentially kind of starting over. But at the same time, if you're able to parlay your celebrity into opportunities, and you're good and talented, then it can work in your benefit also. But I would say that the most difficult part is the mental aspect of it, because you miss your teammates. Like, you spend more time with your teammates than you actually do your family.
And you've been doing that since you were, you know, 8, 10, 12 years old.
Exactly. You have that camaraderie with guys, and you just – and it's funny, because I was talking to a doctor, is that our bodies actually have physical changes that you go through, because you play football for so long, and every time in the fall, like July, August time, they notice that guys and former players – that their testosterone levels are higher during that point in the year than they are during the other times of the year.
Wow, that's
fascinating.
Because your body gets used to it. Your body is on the clock, so it knows that this time of year is around. It's time for you to be playing. So when you're not playing and you're watching on TV, I didn't watch football for probably the first 2 years I finished playing. No, I'm sorry. Well, it's only been 3 years. But for the first, like, year and a half, I didn't watch any football.
Wow.
Except for my Ducks.
Yeah, except for my Ducks.
There you go. So that's what I was going to ask you about. So, so obviously you're a big Ducks guy. So tell us about the state of the program, what you think. Obviously Mike Bellotti was your guy, and then he transitioned over to Chip Kelly, and then eventually now Mark Helfrich is taking over. So what do you think? Are your Ducks, you know, are they a perennial top 5, top 10 program now? How do you think that the transition is going to go now that Chip is gone?
I think the transition is going to go pretty smooth, because Oregon has become known for their even when I was in school, we had a high-powered offense, but it's just transitioned to something unbelievable right now. And I think that Helfrich doesn't quite get enough credit as for how instrumental he was in helping build that offense. He was the offensive coordinator. Chip called the majority of the plays, but he helped design the plays and make it to where the offense could be successful. And I'm really in touch with the program. I talk to a lot of the coaches. I talk to some of the players. And those guys, they really like Helfrich and they respect him, which is the most important thing. And
yeah,
so
he's a young guy. He's 39.
Yeah, but at the same time, Chip Kelly was really young when he got the job, and he had never been a head coach ever before. So I think that experience, I do think that experience is a big deal, but I don't think that it's necessarily the biggest, that it's the biggest determination between winning and losing.
Okay.
And Chip had a great record, 46-7, right? I mean, he
46-7. There's only maybe one or two coaches ever to not just in their first 4 years. Like he has the best first four year record ever.
Ever,
but,
no, that's.
But whew. It's only a couple coaches that have been able to put together a better record than that in any 4 years in their career.
Wow,
that's amazing. So speaking of Chip Kelly, now let's bring it to the NFL. So, what do you think about Chip Kelly and his ability to translate that, you know, nouveau offensive, high-powered offensive scheme into the NFL with the Philadelphia Eagles?
See, okay, one thing that it has been talked about a little bit is that Bill Belichick actually brought Chip Kelly in this last offseason.
Yep.
And then they actually met some the offseason before to discuss their offense and how he runs it and all of that stuff. So that's the reason why you saw New England be so successful this year with the hurry up. And you saw they caught a lot of guys in the NFL off guard, especially on the goal line.
Down.
They hurry straight up and they hand the ball off and the running back walks in. And that's part of what the Oregon system is built on. Is that great defenses, they don't have time to sit there and make calls and get lined up perfectly. No, they just have to line up and play. So I think that Chip is going to institute that, but I don't think that you're going to see him run the same thing that he ran at Oregon. I think you're going to see more of what New England runs, especially if Foles is the quarterback. But if Vic is the quarterback, you'll see a little bit more of the read option, but it'll be more – tailored to the way New England plays football as opposed to the way Oregon plays football.
Yeah, you don't want Vic getting hit too often. I mean, his longevity is in question as it is now.
It's not just Vic. It's any quarterback. No quarterback needs to be – no quarterback is built except for – well, he's not a quarterback. I was going to say Tim.
Except for Cam Newton. He's like a linebacker.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even Cam Newton, you saw in the last regular season game – hurt his leg kind of bad. Quarterbacks aren't built to be taking hits because being able to take hits, you have to build up a tolerance for it. And they don't get hit very often, and they don't lift weights the same way they don't lift weights and train the same exact way the other position players do. So they're not physically like their bodies aren't physically made to take that brutal punishment.
Yeah, and also I would imagine they have to be accurate with throwing, right? So you can, if you're a running back or like you play tight end, if you get banged up, okay, you can play through the pain, but you don't have to throw the ball 30 yards and be accurate. So if you get hit, especially on your throwing shoulder, your arm or your elbow, you know, and you got to get back in the huddle the next play, that's not easy to do.
Exactly.
So let me ask you this, George. Do you think Chip, because this is my issue with Andy Reid, when you've got a running back like Shady McCoy, just like with Ray Rice when Cameron wasn't giving him the ball enough, will Chip, you know, use McCoy and get him his 20 to 25 carries or at least 25 touches, even use him in the screen game?
Oh,
do you think he'll be able to really,
sure,
you know, get that going?
I think the biggest. I actually wrote a blog about it on my blog that Shady will actually be the biggest beneficiary from Chip going to the Eagles because there's so many different ways for him to get the ball. You can hand him the ball because Sadie's a dynamic player. He's not just a playmaker. He's dynamic. He can hit the home run at any point in time, and you can't tackle that guy in the phone booth. So So he's the type of player that's why I also wrote is that I didn't think that Chip was going to leave Oregon, but I said, however, if he did leave Oregon, the only job that would probably be attractive to him is the Eagles, because you have Macklin, you have D-Jack, and then you have a consistent slot receiver in Avant.
Avant, yeah, Selig.
So you have
Cooper.
All type
I like
of,
Cooper, too.
Exactly, Cooper. And you have all type of weapons. So once you get the running game going with McCoy, then you're actually going to see D-Jack and Macklin start to be explosive players again. Like, you're gonna start to see D-Jack backpedaling in the end zone again.
That's great. So what do you think about the playoffs now? I mean, as a former player, you played on some great Jacksonville teams with Fred Taylor and Jimmy Smith, almost as MVP in the beginning of his career. But what do you think about these guys in terms of their mindset getting ready for a Super Bowl? And I know, and always one of the questions that I always had is this whole 2 weeks. Now, college players know it before, you know, the last game of, let's say, the Pac-12 and then a bowl game. But this notion of professional athletes are trained every week to play, and now they got to wait 2 weeks and have all this media scrutiny before the Super Bowl. So tell us about a little bit about the mindset of, you know, how do you prepare for a game? You got the X's and O's, but you also have the mental element of playing, you know, getting ready for a playoff game.
I think a lot of it comes down to the coaches. I think the coaches have to prepare their team and prepare their players for the things that are going to happen, and that they have to keep their team in a mind frame and the mode of, okay, like, it's time to work. Because they're at the beginning, there's the hoopla. Yes, we made it to the Super Bowl, the happiness. And then it turns into, okay, everybody's family members, they want to go to the Super Bowl. Everybody's wife, cousin, their cousin's wife, their sister's uncle's brother, sister's dad, he wants to go to the game.
Yeah.
And so you got to figure out tickets, flights, hotels, and all that stuff. So that's the next few days. Then the next few days, you start to get a little practice in, but then you're dealing with all the media stuff, and then you fly down to New Orleans, like somewhere around game week, and it's really time to really hone in, and you kind of have to keep your team in a bubble, if you will, because yes, there's a lot of media hoopla around, but you got to keep them with that laser focus, but then not feel like that you're uptight and like you're pressing. So it's a delicate balance for the coaches, and the great ones, they get it done.
Yeah, we heard that a lot of coaches actually talk about keeping it simple. Don't give them too much to players because they got enough on their mind, so don't totally change the game plan so that, you know, overfeeding them with too much information can backfire on you.
Well, I don't think that – see, that's one thing that coaches say, but I don't necessarily believe that. I think I think that it's actually the other way around. Coaches normally get 1 week to prepare, but the coaches are actually preparing 2 weeks out, but they only have the game plan to the players that week of game week. So they're actually preparing for the next game a little bit before it happens.
Yeah, prior to.
But then when you give coaches 2 weeks to prepare for a game, they start getting all these harebrained ideas and all these crazy schemes that they can do and this and that, when in reality, you know, stick with the girl that stick with the date you brought to the prom.
Exactly.
Right.
So, George, let's start to look at this game and this Super Bowl 47. It's, you know, the two brothers. What do you think are the keys to the game, and break down the Niners versus the Ravens? And let's hear your Super Bowl pick, man.
Well, at the beginning of the season, the 49ers defense was completely dominant. And then in the middle of the season, they started to give up a few points here and there, and against New England, and even though they came out to a big lead early, they gave up some points to Tom Brady and all of that. And then you see the Ravens offense, like, during the season, you didn't know who was going to show up which week. But they continue to win. So, and I believe in Kaepernick. I'm on Team Kaepernick right now.
Oh, wow.
Even though Joe Flacco, he's thrown 8 touchdowns in the playoffs, no interceptions. He's been playing lights out. And I think that the quarterback play is going to be the difference in the game. But I do think that San Francisco's defense is going to be able to, on some level, that they're going to be able to take away the run of the Ravens, and then I think that their secondary is going to be able to hold up really, really well against the against Joe Flacco. And there's no answer for Kaepernick. I don't think that this kid is fazed by the big stage. You saw him get down, 17 points last week? He didn't even blink.
That's right. 17
nothing coming after the first.
Yeah.
And so do you think if the Ravens D sort of gets to stopping Kaepernick, does that sort of open up things for Gore, though?
Of course. I mean, it's just like what happened in the Atlanta game. They weren't going to let Kaepernick. They were going to force Kaepernick to hand off the ball, and you saw LaMichael James and Gore be able to make some big plays, 8, 9, 10, 12, 15-yard plays. So they took away those 50-yard plays from Kaepernick, but you can't be giving up 7 yards a carry to the running back. They're just going. It's a difference. Do you want to bleed out, or you want to end it quick?
Yeah, and then when you put 8 in the box, then you forget about Crabtree and Vernon Davis, and of course Randy Moss. You know, so I tell you what, Baltimore has their hands full with that offense. But I have a sneaky suspicion that your guy LaMichael James might actually play a role here and might break one.
Listen,
focused on Kaepernick.
Listen, that will be actually no matter what happens. This will be the second consecutive year a Duck has won the Super Bowl. Yeah.
Well, listen, but George, I got to tell you, I'm a Terrapin, so my Terps are in there, Torrey Smith and Vernon Davis.
Okay.
So one of the Terps is going to get a ring, too, so I'm excited.
Yeah, we have LaMichael James,
right?
and Adam Snyder on the 49ers, and we have Ed Dixon on the Ravens.
So you got a score for us, George?
I'm going to go 27-21 49ers.
Wow. Okay, so you got them covering the spread.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
didn't Haloti Ngata go to Oregon, too? Yeah, you forgot about Haloti Ngata.
Oh, my God. And Haloti played with me. I'm sorry, Haloti.
Yeah, that's your guy. I was like, wait a minute.
And Haloti is my guy, too. And Haloti's one of the nicest. He's a massive man, but he's one of the nicest people that you will ever meet. Like, he looks like a big Samoan teddy bear. No, I'm sorry. Sorry, he looks like a big Samoan grizzly bear, but he's really a teddy bear on the inside.
So, George, before we end the show, can you tell everybody where they can, you know, follow you? Obviously, on Twitter, your blog, and you know, I heard you were doing big things with the cupcakes, man. You're on Food Network with the Cupcake War. So, just tell us real quick all that information.
Okay, yeah, my Twitter is at George Reichster, GEORGEWRIGHSTER. Find me there talking about sports, current events, pop culture, whatever. Ask me a question, I will respond. And you can find my bakery, like you brought up the cupcakes, at Violet's Cakes 1, V-I-O-L-E-T-S Cakes 1. And we're located in Pasadena. We ship all across the country. And my blog is tightend.blogspot.com. So tight end, like the position, .blogspot.com. And you can find me and my opinions housed right there.
And George is great, because I follow George on Twitter. So I'll tell everybody, George, you're great on Twitter. Keep up the good work.
All right, thanks. Definitely. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, no problem. Add me again.
All right. Definitely will, George.
Take care.
All right.
Take care.
Bye.
Oh, that's great, man.
But that was great to get an ex-NFL tight end perspective. And, you know, he said something interesting, retiring at 29. Just think about that for a minute.
I know.
In society, that just doesn't happen.
Yeah. No, you're right. My ears were ringing when he said that. It's amazing. But listen, he's transitioned fantastically.
Good for
him.
And
a guy like that, you
him.
Just wish him all the best and just kudos, you know. So, hey.
Great show.
That was another great show. You know, a lot of basketball talk and some great football talk. And listen, he's got the Niners covering the spread. So, listen, we'll join you on Monday. Enjoy the weekend, Pro Bowl, NBA, college hoops. And we'll see you Monday with Ian Begley from ESPN New York. Ray and Tech.
Out. Have a great weekend.
Talking sports with friends.